Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Ted Zion Amud Aleph, four lines down, Amar Rav Kahana. The Gemara now has been discussing the authorship or the attribution of the Mishnah. We had two opinions as how it laid out. We had the opinion of Shmuel, which says that it's dual authorship. The Reisha is a Liba de Rabbanon, and the Seifa is a Liba de Rabbi Tarfon. And then we had Ravina come along and say, no, Kula Rabbi Tarfon, that the whole Mishnah is according to Rabbi Tarfon. And he sets it up similarly to what we saw in the previous day's daf, which was that there's different permissions that are given here. One individual has permission just for their peirot. The other individuals, according to Rashi, both have permission for the shvarim. According to Rav Tam, neither of them have permission for their shvarim. And therefore, in the same location, you have a different din with regards to Shein and Regel versus Karen. Because for Karen, it'll be deemed to be a reshut rabim. And for Shein v'Regel, it'll be deemed to be Reshut and Izak, and that's why you'll end up with a different outcome for those dinim, despite the fact that they're in the same location. So I'm Rav Kahana. Amrita l'shmaitata kamei de Rav Zvid Minardo. I said over this explanation to Rav Zvid Minardo that Rabbi Tarfon is the author of the entire Mishnah, like Rabbi Ravina said. V'amrali, mi matzid mukim la kula ki Rabbi Tarfon. Wait a minute, can you really set up the Mishnah like Rabbi Tarfon? V'aktani. Hashein mu'edet lechol letaro uila. Shein is only mu'ad when it comes to eating things that are appropriate or normal for it to eat. That's part of the definition of shein. Shein is something that where the animal eats things that it normally consumes, and it's also hana'a, gets benefit from it and enjoys what it is eating. Ra'uila in shein ra'uila lo. From that you would understand that it's only a mu'ad when it's ra'uila. When it's ain ra'uila, it would not be a mu'ad. Rabbi Tarfon, if you think the author of the Mishnah is Rabbi Tarfon, Hamar Mishuneh Karen b'Chatzer Nizak, that Karen is considered to be Mishuneh in the Chatzer Nizak, Nezek Shalem Mishalem, and therefore you would pay full Nezek in that instance. So then what ends up happening is that even for things that are not Ra'uila, which is, say you're in the Chatzer Nizak is the place where you're Chayav for Shein v'Regel. So in that case, it's only chayav for things that it eats normally. But if you hold like Rabbi Tarfon believes that when it comes to Karen in the Chatzer Nizak, there's no distinction between Tam and Muad. That means that right away, when it does something in the Chatzer Nizak, it's chayav nezek shalim. So what will turn out is, if the animal eats something that's ra'ula, for instance, feed for the animal, then you'll be chayav mitzad shein, you have chayav nezek shalim right away for shein. On the other hand, if it eats something that is not normal for it to eat, it has a shirt or a pair of pants, and it chews them up and eats them, that would be considered to be Karen. Karen for Rabbi Tarfon is also Chayav Nezek Shalem. So it'll turn out that no matter what it eats, or how it eats in the Reshut HaNizak, it'll be Chayav Nezek Shalem right away. So that distinction, that line in the Mishnah, it says that the Shein is Chayav and it's Mu'ad right away to eat things that are Ra'ui. Yeah, but it's also mu'ad to eat things that are not ra'ui, and you'd be chayav for both of those nezek shalim. So that would preclude us from saying that Rabbi Tarfon is the author of the Mishnah, because the distinction the Mishnah is making is not correct. It's not only mu'ad for items that are ra'uila, it's also mu'ad for things that are not ra'uila. And therefore, Rabbi Tarfon can't be the author of the Mishnah. Tosfot over here says you can't explain that maybe the difference here is that Rabbi Tarfon thinks you pay Nezek Shalem in Chatzer Nizak, but you pay it Migufo. So it has a din somewhat like Tam, but it's slightly different than the din of Mu'ad by Shein, because by Mu'ad by Shein, you'd pay out of the Aliyah. So maybe you can make a distinction like that. Tosfot says, V'lashon Mu'ad Shayach Al Zeh. He says that the Lashon of Mu'ad is also used, or in that vein is used to mean l'shalem min aliyah, but nevertheless the Gemara is clear on Daf Yudchet that she'ein ra'uila only pays chatzi nezek. So therefore we know when you eat something that's not ra'uila, it is chatzi nezek, and you can't make the claim here that it's nezek shalem migufo, because nezek shalem doesn't even come up or is a possibility entertained by the Gemara Daf Yudchet, and therefore you can't draw that distinction, which would have been a way to avoid the problem and say yes, Shein is mu'ad the Devar Ra'uila, because there it pays Nezek Shalem min Aliyah, whereas by Karen it would only pay Nezek Shalem min Gufo. Ela de Olam Rabbanon. So we have to come up with a third alternative now, which is because there are those that believe or want the Mishnah to have single authorship despite the difficulty, we have to come up with an answer for those Amuraim that view or prefer a Mishnah to be explained in that way. So they're going to have to say now that the authorship is attributed to the Rabbanan. Because Surei Mechsera and the Mishnah is missing some transition conjunction words. V'achitani, chamisha tamim hein, there are five tamim. V'im hu adu chamishatan muadin. If those five items become mu'ad, then they have a din of mu'ad. So instead of before, where we said that there were five tamim, which were the items that were listed in the beginning of the Mishnah, Karen, Nigicha, Nigifa, all the items that are the subset, subcategory of Karen. Then we said five mu'adin, the way that we calculated it in the Mishnah was the next five items in the Mishnah. Shein, Regel, Shor Mu'ad, Shor Mazik, Bishut, and Izak, Adam. Those were the next five items. Now the Gemara is changing that and saying, no. The five tamim and five mu'adim are all incorporated in the Reisha. The Mishnah says you have five tamim. And those five tamim, if they, on a recurring basis, act in that way, they become the five mu'adim that is mentioned in the introduction to the Mishnah. Then, v'shein v'regel, mu'adim mitchilatan. So then, in addition to that, not part of the five tamim and five mu'adim, we say that shein and regel are mu'ad from the beginning. V'heichan ha'adatan. And where does that happen? B'chatzer ha'nizak. In the area or the property of the nizak. So instead of seeing the second half of the Mishnah as explaining the five mu'adin, we cover the five tamim and the five mu'adim in the Reisha, and then the Mishnah goes on to explain other mu'adin, including Shein v'Regel, and then it defines for you the location where Shein and Regel is, which is B'chatzer ha'nizak. So instead of Chatzer ha'nizak being a form of mu'ad, it is the qualification of Shein v'Regel. So now you can do that because you no longer need it to be five separate things in the Seifa. And so that's how the Gemara now gives authorship to the Rabbanon and says, yes, it's Chatzer HaNizak, but the Chatzer HaNizak is referencing the Shein V'Regel, not the Karen. And therefore it's like the Rabbanon and not like Rabbi Tarfon. Matkifla Ravina, Haktani Lekaman. The problem with that is the upcoming Mishnah that says, Shor Mazik Birshut HaNizak, Ketzad. A shor that does damage in the area, the property of the Nizak, Ketzad. How is that? What is the scenario? Iyamar Bishlama Ariba. If you say to me, over here, in our Mishnah, that it's discussing it, then you can begin a Mishnah that says Ketzad. How did that come about? Because it's referencing back to the Mishnah over here, which already explained to you that there is such a concept, there is such a Mu'ad. And since there is such a Mu'ad, I can ask the question of Ketzad. How exactly is this scenario? To begin a Mishnah with, Shor HaMazik Birshut HaNizak Ketzad implies that you knew something or you had information before. Where's that information in our Mishnah? So that would make sense. But on the other hand, Ella Iyamart Lo Ayriba, but the way you're explaining our Mishnah now, that is not what it means in our Mishnah. Now it's qualifying Shein V'Regel, nothing to do with Karen. Then what's the reference in the Mishnah or that upcoming Mishnah in Chav Dalet? Where's it referencing back to? My Ketzad. How can it say, how does that come about? Or what is the scenario? We don't even know that there's a din like this. Ella Amaravina Chasuri Mechsera. Let's try a different way to fill in the conjunctive words that are missing. V'achtani. Chamisha tamim heim, v'im huadu chamishatan muadin. So the same explanation again, like we did before, which is the five tamim and five muadin all incorporated in the five items that are mentioned in the beginning, which all are versions of Karen. They are tamim on the outset. If they happen on a recurring basis, they will become mu'adin. That same five will become mu'adin. V'shein v'regel mu'adin mitchilatan. Shein and regel are also mu'adin mitchilatan. V'zehu shor ha-mu'ad. And that is a shor mu'ad. V'shor ha-mazik birshut ha-nizak machloket rabbi tarfon v'rabbanan. And then the shor that does damage in the area of nizak, that is a machloket rabbi tarfon in the rabbanan. V'yesh mu'adim acherin, ki yotze be'elu. And then there's an additional grouping of mu'adin, which are not incorporated in what we said so far. And that is the list of animals in the Mishnah, which are azev, vari, vadova, bardalis, vanamer, vanachash. So those are the animals that we mentioned yesterday. Azev is a wolf, ari is a lion, adov is a bear. Bardalos, there are different interpretations. Some say that it's a panther, some say a leopard, some say hyena. If you say that it is a leopard, then the namer, which is usually translated as leopard, you'd have to translate as a tiger in that instance. V'nachash would be the snake. So those are the five wild animals that are mentioned in our Mishnah. And therefore the explanation will be, as the Gemara is about to bring now, explains that that term is a machloket Rabbi Tarfon and the Rabbonon. And therefore you don't need to worry about authorship anymore, because that one line that was the difficult line in the Mishnah, we've now said is a machloket Rabbi Tarfon the Rabbonon. And now you can create the authorship any way you want, because that one line is now taken out as the problem. So now you can make it kula Rabbonon hi, and not worry about that one line that supported Rabbi Tarfon, because the Mishnah explicitly says that that is machloket Rabbonon and Rabbi Tarfon. Tanya Nami Ochi, we have a braita that supports that understanding, which is chamishatam im heim, v'imuadu im huadu chamishatan muadin. And if they happen on a recurring basis, then they become muadin. That'll be the five tamim and the five muadin. V'shein regel muadin mitchilatan. Shein and regel are muadim from the outset. V'zehu shor muad. Now what that means, v'zehu shor muad, is actually a machloket Rashi. Over here says, v'zehu shor muad had amran. Im huadu chamishatan muadim, zehu shor muad. The definition of shor muad is those five things that, if they happen on a recurring basis, turn into muadin. That's the case of shor muad. Others interpret it as being right after v'shein regel muadim etchilatan. That's a shor muad. That's a shor muad who doesn't go through this process of having to become a muad. That's a muad from the outset. B'shor mazik b'shut anizak. And then you have the shor that does damage in the shut anizak, which is a machloket Rabbi Tarfon v'rabbonon. So that solves that problem. V'yesh muadim acherim ki yotze be'elu. We have other muadim similar to these, which are these wild animals, Azev, Ari, Hadov, Anamer, Bardalis, Venachash. So that's the way to explain it. And here we have a braita that supports our understanding of the Mishnah. So now you say, look, they have a Chasurei Mekster in the Mishnah, how are they doing this? But they have a braita that corroborates that understanding of our Mishnah. Remember, the Mishnah is shorthand and is used as a vehicle for learning it by heart. So here, if you're missing some transitions or little pieces of it, that's not exceptional in a Mishnah. How to fill it in? Here we have a braita telling us or giving us evidence of the fact that the way we filled it in is correct. And that's what it says, Tanya Nami Ochi. Iku deramila mirma. Some present it not as the way that we have done until now, looking or searching for the authorship of the Mishnah, but rather as a stira. Tanan, chamisha tamim v'chamisha muadim v'tuleka. There are five tamim and five muadim. And no more. Vaika. What about the list at the end of the Mishnah? Hazev, Ari, Adova, Namer, Vabardalus, Venachash. You have the animals, these six animals that are mentioned at the end of the Mishnah. How come they're not incorporated in the five muadin that are mentioned in the beginning of the Mishnah? Umishani, Amaravina, Chasurei Mechsera. So that's what Ravina now says, it's missing words. Ve'ochiktani, and this is how you would explain the Mishnah. Chamishatamim heim, vim huadu. If they happen on a recurring basis and the Balim are warned about it, Chamishatan muadim, they turn into five muadin. Shem regel muadin mitchilatan. Shem regel are from the outset muadin to or act in this way as a normal course of behavior. Vezeu shor muad, the two ways that we explained before. Vishor mazik b'shut anizak machloket Rabbi Tarfon v'rabbonon. And then v'yesh muadin acherin. There are other muadin in this list kiyotze beilu that are similar. Hazei v'ari v'adov v'namer bardalis v'anachash, which are all these animals as far as these animals are concerned, why they're incorporated in this list, whether that's because the Rabbanan specifically state here that they cannot be domesticated, whether that's because these were the wild animals found in Eretz Yisrael in the time, or whether because these are just examples giving you paradigms of what are dangerous animals. Now, what is interesting over here is the Balei HaTosafot. The Balei HaTosafot over here say about these six animals that are mentioned at the end, here, the Mishnah says they are muadin. Muadin would imply that they're muad from the outset, no matter what damage they did. Tosafot says no. Lav b'chol inyanei hezek chashivei muadin. They're not considered to be muadin for any damage that they did. Ela kol echad b'midei de'orche. Each one according to what is normal for that animal to do. And we're going to see on the second half of today's daf that a ze'ev or an ari, they kill in different ways. Since they kill in different ways, only the normal way for them to kill would be considered muad. If they do something mishunet, they do something unusual, then it would not be under the rubric of muad, mitchilatan, but rather it would be tam, because that's unusual. Umide dorche mishalim nezek shalim. So if it's something that's normal and their consistent behavior of this animal, then you would pay nezek shalem, but it's also then shein v'regel, because it's orchei. That means you'd only be chayav in chatzer nizak, but in reshut rabim, you'd be patur. On the other hand, if it does something unusual, it'd be karen, and you'd be chayav chatzi nezek, but that would be even in the reshut rabim. So it'll turn out to be something somewhat seems illogical, which is that if you take your pet lion out into the street, and the pet lion eats people like lions do, you'd be patur, because that's shein v'reshut rabim. No problem. He kills the person, not the way that lions kill, then it's a tam, and you pay chatzi nezek. That would be the conclusion from what the Balei HaTosafot say, which seems untenable, impossible that it could be that way. You can see there's a little aleph there from the Gra, who points you to the Rambam. And the Rambam, when he brings down these animals, does not make such a distinction. He simply says that these animals are muadin to kill and muadin to do hezek. But that's the nature of these animals. The nature of these animals in their interactions with humans is that they cause problems. They either eat them or they damage them. They do something that is problematic. And therefore, the Rambam makes no distinction here, whether it's Shein, Veregel, Karen. He says, you're chayav in all those cases. He says, Hamisha minei beima muadin mitchilat briatan, lazik, from their outset. Vafilu hein tarbut, even if they're domesticated, which would lean towards saying that these are the ones that the Chachamim believe cannot be domesticated. Fikach meziko emitu, if they do damage or kill. Benigicha u benishicha u drisak yotzben chayav nezek shalem. Your chayav nezek shalem makes no tour for Reshut Rabim, makes no distinction between Karen and Shane. So you see that the Rambam makes none of these distinctions that the Balei HaTosafot make. Again, the Rambam Shita in most seems to make more sense, which is that if these animals are going to kill or do damage, you should be chayav nezek shalem. You shouldn't have any tour of orche, the normal way to do it. But what you have to say again is that we saw this earlier, that if you explain the tour of shein and regel and reshut rabim, it's because of the gzeirat hakatuv. It's not because you have permission to do that. It's not because it's a normal behavior and people accept that, but rather it's simply gzeirat hakatuv. Like the Rosh says, that your patur be shut rabim, because it's not the acher, then if the Tosafot is following that shita, you can understand why he says this. It's not about whether it's permissible, not whether it's acceptable to take them out. It's simply the Torah says, if they do what they're do, if animals do what they do in reshut rabim, that you are patur if they eat and they act in a way that they normally do. If it's in reshut rabim, you're patur. And therefore, if the Gzeret HaKatuv would apply according to Tosafot, and your patur b'shut rabim. Eben Ezel and the Rav Soloveitchik over here tried to explain the machloke between the Balei HaTosafot and the Rambam based on that. Rav Soloveitchik says simply the Rambam saw this as being completely inconsistent with what you'd want the halacha to be. And therefore, he says, Bal Korcho, you have to say that it's Karen and your chayav in reshut rabim. The Rambam has to explain it as Karen, and Karen that's paying Nezek Shalem, which is saying that even though it's a normal behavior of these animals, despite that fact, the Chachamim deemed it to be Karen, even though it's not Mishuneh, because he's not willing to accept that they're going to be Patur B'Shut Rabim if you make it into Shein V'Regel. So he calls it a Karen, but a Karen that's Mu'ad Mitchilata, and since it's Mu'ad Mitchilata, you're Chayav after the bat. And then obviously the Balei HaTosafot think that it's Shein V'Regel based on the Gzeret HaKatuv. The Eben Ezel says that there's two pieces here, or two parts to the puzzle. It's partly Shein V'Regel, partly Karen, according to the Rambam. It's Shein and Regel in terms of the fact that it's normal for the animals to act this way, but it's Karen from the perspective of that they are Mu'adin Mitchilatan. So it's kind of half Karen, half Shein V'Regel. And so therefore, you're going to have to pay for it because the Karen will make you chayav in the Reshut Rabim, and the Shein V'Regel will make it that you should have expected this behavior. So the Eben Ezel says that the Rambam basically is combining the Shein and Regel and Karen together to create a new category that incorporates these wild animals. And that's why you're chayav at the outset in Reshut Rabim, Nezek Shalem. Because yes, it's common behavior and behavior you should anticipate, but it's not Shein V'Regel where it's acceptable or where there you have permission to be there like that. It's like Karen, where it's something that is not acceptable within society, and therefore you're going to be chayav in Reshut Rabim. Lodir votes. So now it says in the Mishnah that it's not mu'ad, lodir votes means to squat down, to sit down on items and crush them. Amar Rabbi Elazar, lo shanu ala pachim gidolim. It's only unusual when there are larger utensils that are out there, and it intentionally sits on them to crush them. That is an unusual behavior. Aval pachim ktanim or chehu. It's smaller utensils, and it has no problem lying down on the smaller utensils. That's the normal way that it would crouch down, and therefore would not be Karen, but rather Shein Veregel, because it's doing what it does. Lema misayile. Let us say that this helps him. Abeima muedet aleich kidarka. An animal is muedet to walk normally. Ulishaber, to break things. Ulamaich et adam vet abeima vet akilim. And to crush people, animals, and kilim. So over here it sounds like what the Gemara is assuming is that this is an animal that is sitting down, and it's muad to sit down, break things, or crush people, animals, or kelim that are underfoot. I mean that when it lays down on them, it will crush them. That makes it. So how do we reconcile that with our Mishnah? Rabbi Elazar would be a great reconciliation, which says it depends on the size of the kelim. The larger kelim, it doesn't do that too. Smaller kelim, it has no problem just sitting on them. So the Gemara says, Dilma min atzad. Who says you have to explain this when it says it crushes them? Who says it's from squatting or sitting down on them? It's simply because they are sitting between it and the wall. The animal likes to brush up against the wall, likes to move to the side. So the animal, if there's something between it and the wall, it will just crush whatever is between it and the wall. Again, that's regel because that's the normal way for the animal to behave. Or it could be Shane if he wants to rub up against the wall and get hana from it. But that's normal behavior, but it's not sitting on it. It wouldn't prove to us anything about sitting down on kelim. Iga damre, Amar Rav Elazar, lo teima pachim gdolim hu delav orche. Don't suggest that only large utensils are not normal for it. Aval pachim ktanim orcheihu. But smaller utensils, it is the regular way to do it. Ela afilu pachim ktanim nami lav orcheihu. In this case, he says it's caring for both of them. The animal will not sit down on large utensils, nor will it sit down on small utensils. It'll make it uncomfortable, and therefore it will not just sit down on a regular basis to do that. If it does it, it's intentionally trying to do damage, coming to Zik, and then you would be under the rubric of Karen and not under Shane Viregel. Then we're going to bring from that same bright that we just brought before, which we thought was a proof. Now it'll be a problem. To crush, to sit on a person, an animal, or kelim makes it sound like, even in that case, it's considered to be muedet to do these types of items. And that would be orche rather than lav orche, which is what Rabbi Elazar is describing in the sitting down of the animal. And here we have no leeway because he's saying all types of sitting on kelim is considered to be tam and muad, seem to be karen. So Rabbi Elazar, dilma min atzad. Rabbi Elazar says, you have to say that bright this time about the case that I'm speaking about. Who says it's talking about sitting on the animal? It could be that it's talking about crushing it against the wall. Ika deramila mirma. Some present it as a stira between our Mishnah and that Braita. It's not below their votes, our Mishnah. Vatanya ulameichet adam vetabimah tekelim. Our Mishnah says to crouch down is Karen. Whereas the Braita that we're bringing says it is regel. That it's the normal way for the animal to behave. I'm Rabbi Elazar, lokasha. That's not a problem. Kan bepachim gdolim, kan bepachim tanim. And here Rabbi Elazar is coming to reconcile between them and say, our Mishnah is only talking about larger utensils. That's why it's Karen, because it's unusual. The Braita is talking about smaller utensils where it is normal, and therefore it's deemed to be regel. This is similar to the first explanation that we gave of Rabbi Elazar's opinion, but it just does it through a reconciliation of a steer between the Braita and the Mishnah, rather than saying that the Braita is not speaking about that case. He's solving it by saying it is speaking about the same case, but a different kelim. And because of the different kelim, it changes the dynamic as whether it's Karen or Regel. Azev Ariva Bardalus. So here we have the list of the animals from the Mishnah. My Bardalus. What is this Bardalus? Already we had trouble translating it. The Gemara is faced with a similar issue, which is the Bardalus is a Mishnaic term. Right? A Hebrew term that's used in the Mishnah. Here in the Bavel, they're trying to figure out what this Bardalus is. Again, we translated it before. We saw the possibilities of it being a weasel, some say a viper, a hyena, a cheetah. And then we mentioned before the possibilities of it being a panther or a leopard. So it's either most likely within the feline category and something along those lines, which would be distinct from Namer. Amar Rav Yehuda, Nifriza. It's called a Nifriza. My Nifriza. So we're no better off than we were before, because now we have Nifriza, which is the definition of Barlas. We don't know what Nifriza is. I'm Rav Yosef, Apa. So it's an Apa, and here is where the explanation comes in, or seemingly the Gemara is satisfied with the word Appa, and then we just gave the different possibilities as to what Appa was, and that would define for you, if that's an Appa, it would be similar to a Bargalus. Part of that might have to do with what the real word is. Is this the real word Appa, or is the word Abba, or is it Appa with an ayin at the end? Some of that might change what the meaning is, or what we think it is. Meitave, Rabbi Meir Omer, Af Hatzavua. Rabbi Meir in a Braita adds on an additional animal, the Tzavua. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Af Anachash. Rabbi Elazar adds an Anachash similar to our Mishnah, where Rabbi Elazar says the Anachash cannot be domesticated. V'amar Rabbi Yosef, Tzavua zu Appa. And Rabbi Yosef says that Tzavua is synonymous with an Appa. That's a problem, because if Rabbi Meir is coming to add to the list of our Mishnah already has a Bartolus in it, which we called an Appa now. And now you're telling me that Rabbi Yosef says the addition that Rabbi Meir made to the Mishnah with Tzavua, which is equated with an Appa, now you have Appa in the Mishnah twice, based on that. Lo kasho, that's not a problem. Kan bit Tzavua zachar, kan bit Tzavua nekeva. Depends on the gender of the animal. Now, Rashi brings two possibilities as to what that means. Meaning that Rashi in the first Lashon says, Bardalus de matnina, matnitin hu tzavua zakur, that the Bardalus of our Mishnah is a male tzavua, and the tzavua that Rabbi Meir adds in, which says ab tzavua, is a female tzavua, and that's what Rabbi Yosef in our Mishnah says that tzavua zu apa, that when he said tzavua equals apa, he's referencing the Mishnah, which is that tzavua zachar of our Mishnah, that's called an apa. Rabbi Meir Mosif ab tzavua nekeva, that he added in the female tzavua, and even though it's not called an apa, that's what he added in. So that'd be the first way to explain it. On the other hand, Rashi brings a second lashon, where it's similar to what the Rabbeinu Chananel says here, which is Rabbeinu Chananel says, tzavua tarvayu apa ninu. Both of these tzavuas are called an apa. Miu nifriza shema nekeva, v'tzavua shema zachar. Nifrisa is the female, which is our Mishnah. That's what the Gemara said. Bardalus is a Nifrisa, is the female. Bitzavua, which is mentioned Rabbi Meir, is the male version of that. So this is just the opposite of what we said before. Rashi in the first Lashon says that the Zachar is the one in the Mishnah, and then the Keva is the one that Rabbi Meir is adding. And the second Lashon, which is akin to what Rabbeinu Chananel says, is that the Mishnah is talking about the Nekeva, and the Braita that brings Rabbi Meir says that it's also adding in the Zachar. The next Braita that brings, the Tanya. We have a Braita. Tzavua Zachar. What is this Tzavua Zachar? What happens to it? So in this case, what the Braita is doing is explaining to you why it made a distinction between a Tzavua Zachar and a Tzavua Nekeva. Why would you have said some, why would you have differentiated in that manner? So that's here, Kedetanya, Tzavua Zachar. The Braita then is telling you that a Tzavua Zachar is distinct from a Tzavua Nekeva. And therefore, what's happening here, according to the first Lashon of Rashi, is our Mishnah is talking about a Tzavua Zachar. Rabbi Meir is adding in a Tzavua Nekeva. And according to that first Lashon, the Tzavua Zachar is the only one that's called an Appa. And that's talking about what the Mishnah says. That's what Rabbi Yosef said. That Tzavua Zachar that is in the Mishnah, that is an Appa. And Tzavua Nekeva that's mentioned Rabbi Meir, that's not an Appa. How do you know that? Because look at this unique quality of the Tzavua Zachar, and that's why we're bringing the Braita down. To tell you that the Tzavua Zachar is this unique property to it that makes it into an Appa. On the other hand, if you look, learn like the second Lashon, that both of them are called an Appa, but the Mishnah was talking about the Nekeva, and Rabbi Meir added in the Tzavua Zachar, why did he add in Tzavua Zachar if they're both called an Appa? It's because the Tzavua Zachar has these unusual qualities. So according to the first Lashon, Tzavua Zachar is a different species than the Tzavua Nekeva. It's called an Appa. The second one is not called an Appa. And here the Bright is telling you, look, this is what the species of Tzavua Zachar is, and this is what it does. The other end, in the second Lashon, where the Mishnah is a Nekeva, and Rabbi Meir is a Zachar, and both of them are an Appa, then why did Rabbi Meir have to add in the Tzavua Zachar? The answer is this Braita, which tells us there's an unusual quality to a Tzavua Zachar, which is, Tanya, Tzavua Zachar l'achar sheva shanim nasea atalif. A Tzavua Zachar, after 7 years, becomes a bat. Atalif l'achar sheva shanim nasea arpad. After 7 years, a bat turns into an arpad. Arpad is actually the Aramaic translation of a bat sometimes. So it probably is a different species of bat. Some suggest that it's a bat, the fruit-eating bat, rather than the bat that eats the smaller animals, and therefore it's a larger-sized bat. L'arpad, l'achar sheva shanim naseh kimosh. An arpad, after 7 years, becomes a thorn or thorn bush. Kimosh, l'achar sheva shanim naseh chuach. And a thorn bush, after 7 years, becomes like a nettle. Chuach, l'achar sheva shanim naseh shade. And a chuach, after 7 years, becomes a shade, becomes a demon. First of all, the number 7 is a number that's used for cycling in Chazal, as well as numbers in general. The days of the week are 7, the 7 shanim to the Shemitah cycle. 7 is considered to be derech ha-teva. And so the use of sheva shanim over here is likely means that, which is this is a natural cycle that is going on. That's number 1. Number 2, the Marsha says over here, kol ha-molid, molid b'domelo. Anything that gives birth something similar to it. Ukumosha apahu ra, shibinachashim. Just like the apa is the worst of the snakes, it's a viper. That was one of the definitions I told you of apa over here, is that it was a viper. Then, and it's a type of chaya, when it then goes on to its next transition, it turns into the worst of the birds. The worst of the birds are the bats. And then after it goes from being an animal, a bird, then it flips over to being a tree or a bush, and it goes to be the worst of the bushes, which are these thorn bushes. And after it's done being a bush, it goes over to being a shade hamazik, which is within the moving beings, or we'll call them even human beings, is the worst of the human beings. And therefore, you have here what is passing through or moving through these different transitions of going from one bad thing to the next bad thing. Whether that has to do with some sort of gilgul, that bad items or individuals, after they pass away, then they come back, reincarnate as something bad again, until they fix the problem, then the problem persists. Or is there, Bright is just drawing a parallel between within each category, we can see that there are good things and that there are evil or bad things within every category. Any category of Oaf, Chaya, Adam, all of them have parts of that category, species within that category that are bad or evil. Meaning that it's not particular to being a Chaya Be'ima. It means that within every category, with every species, there are these evil or bad parts to them. And again, you could look at this as being allegorical, which is individuals, if they don't take care of their evil, whether it's inclinations or evil character traits, then sometimes they disappear because the person grows up or gets older, but they are come back reincarnate, meaning that they manifest themselves differently as you age. So if you have a bad character trait that you don't take care of, if after some time it's not relevant anymore because you're no longer a toddler, you're now a young child, or you're no longer a young child, you're a teenager, now you're an adult, but that will reincarnate or manifest itself in a different way in each cycle of your life if you don't ever take care of it. And that seems to be mostly what the message of the Braita is, that when something is bad, if it's not addressed, it will continue to come back as something bad. It may not be exactly like it was before, but it will continue to or persistently be a problem until you address the problem. All right. Shidro shel adam, l'achar sheva shanim, naseh nachash. The spine of an individual after 7 years turns into a snake. V'hayni milei d'lo kara b'modim. That's if he did not bend down, he did not bow down in modim. As the Balei Tosafot note over here, this is likely referencing the Gemara in Brachot. The Gemara in Brachot says that the way to bow for modim is mitzvah lichroa. It's a bow down. V'chi zokif, zokif kechivya. When you rise up, you should rise up like a snake, which means that you raise your head first, and then you bring the rest of your body up very quickly in a motion like a snake. So he says that this is a midah keneged midah. Someone who did not bow down during modim, then this evil or terrible thing happens, which is he didn't do like the nachash. Therefore, after he passes away, his shidra, his spine, will then turn after 7 years into a nachash. So after he passes away, then it'll turn into a snake. You could argue that what you're saying, which is that it's while he's alive, which is that his spine curves like that of a snake. And that curvature is caused by the fact that he didn't bow down at Modim. Again, an idea of Midah Keneged Midah. The idea being that if someone doesn't act appropriately, here they didn't bow down in Modim to acknowledge and give thanks for Hashem, then their spine turns into a snake who is the paradigm of problematic relationships with Hashem. One of them is the Midrash that Rashi quotes about the snake, Be'afar Tochal, that you're going to eat the dust of the earth. Why is that a punishment? He has his food everywhere that he goes. Hashem says, I have nothing to do with this animal anymore. He doesn't have to say thank you, doesn't have to say anything because he always has his food ready. He severed the relationship. So that's the same idea here. The person who didn't bow down and say thank you and give acknowledgement to Hashem, then his spine turns into a snake, which is the paradigmatic animal that has no relationship or has severed the relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So that could be, again, how this is an analogy to something along those lines. There are others that suggest that there is a bone in the spine of the individual from which the Tchiyat HaMeitim takes place. And what's said here is someone didn't bow down to Modim. It turns into a snake, which means that bone will be lost and they will not become the Tchiyat HaMeitim. Balei Tosafot bring that explanation down, but they're unhappy with that explanation about the Tchiyat HaMeitim because they think it's too severe for the violation. A person should lose his Tchiyat HaMeitim over not bowing down at Modim when we know that the principle is Kol Yisrael Yishlem Chedek L'Olam Haba. And therefore, it seems that the punishment does not seem to fit the crime that was done or the problem that was here. Amamar, Rabbi Meir Omer, Afat Savua. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Afa Nachash. Rabbi Elazar says also the Nachash. Tosafot over here points out that this has to be Rabbi Elazar and not Rabbi Eliezer, because we have Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, which would cause a problem for the position over here, and therefore he says the Mishnah in Sanhedrin is Rabbi Eliezer, our Mishnah over here is Rabbi Elazar, and here, David, is your question. Ba'anan Tanan. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Bizman Shein B'nei Tarbut, Einan Muadim, V'Nachash Muad Le'Olam. So Tani, Nachash. Don't say Afa Nachash. Rabbi Elazar Omer, HaNachash. But it says the snake. The snake is Muad Mitchilata, as opposed to his opinion with regards to the other animals. So it's not also the Nachash. He's saying not also the Nachash. Also Nachash would imply that the other animals are Muad Mitchilatan as well. Rabbi Elazar does not believe that. Rabbi Elazar believes the other animals are able to be domesticated, and they might have a din of tam up front. So now when he says Rabbi Elazar Omer Nachash, he means Nachash exclusively, not also the Nachash. And then that would accord with our Mishnah, which is in the position of our Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar says Nachash is more problematic or different than the other animals. So in the Braita, if he says Nachash, not Afa Nachash, you would understand it. Amar Shmuel, Ari Birshut Rabim Daras V'chal Patur. And Ari, in the Rishut Rabim, that is Doreis, and eats, is Patur. Taraf V'chal Chayav. If he does Toreif and eats, he is Chayav. Daras V'chal Patur. If he's Doreis and eats, it is Patur. Kevin de Orche the Midras. Havalei Kamosh Achla Peirot V'yakot. Because Doreis is the normal way that the lion behaves, and therefore if he eats using drisa in the Rishut HaRabim, that's equivalent of any other animal eating fruits and vegetables in Rishut HaRabim. Tabili Shein Rishut HaRabim or Patur. That's Shein Rishut HaRabim and you are Patur. This is somewhat supportive of what the Balei HaTosafot said before. Taraf, Lav Orchehu. And then if he's Toreif, that is not the usual way to behave. And therefore, it'd be deemed to be Karen. He'd be Chayav and Shut Rabim, but only Chatzi Nezek. What is the difference between Doreis and Toreif? So the Rabbeinu Chananel over here says that the method of killing is the difference between Drisa and Treifa, which is that there are certain animals that kill through their teeth. There are other animals that kill through their claws. So if you look at, for instance, the distinction between a wolf and a lion, a lion, which has very, very sharp paws, uses his paws to kill, and then uses his mouth only secondarily, either to eat or to finish off the kill. On the other hand, the ze'ev, which does not have really strong claws, he uses his teeth, or the sharpness of his teeth, to kill. So that would be the difference. Rabbeinu Chananel says this, Perish, in Minkeah ze'ari ha'beima biyadav umeita, it uses its paw, Be irus shalom. Here he believes that there is venom in the paw. Achla patur. Shekein darkau be'et shirutze lechol. In that case, it'd be patur reshut rabim, because that's shein. That's the normal way that the lion kills. The normal way for the lion to kill is doreis. Doreis means using its paw to kill. So if it kills that way, that's shein. If it uses its teeth, that's toreif, which is the meaning of the toreif means to tear apart. And so it's using its teeth, that's an unusual way to behave, and that'll be keren. That's the distinction that Rabbeinu Hanano makes. Rashi, on the other hand, says the distinction is not in the method of killing, but rather in the nature of how it eats it. Rashi says, daras shelo haraga, that it doesn't wait or doesn't kill it in order to eat it. The lion eats its prey while it's still alive. It subdues it with its paw, or it renders it defenseless by using its paw, but then it will eat it while it's still alive. On the other hand, taraf is when you've already killed the prey and eat it when the prey is dead. So the definition, according to Rashi, is in not the method of killing, but rather in the nature of how it eats it. It's eating the prey alive. That's normal for a lion. If it eats the prey after it's dead, that is unusual for the lion. And now the Gemara asks, the memra, the treifa lav orchehu. You're telling me that treifa is not the normal way for a lion to behave. So Rashi means it kills its prey and then eats it. Whereas for the Rabbeinu Hanano, that would mean that it uses its teeth for its prey. Vaktiv, we have an explicit pasuk in Nachum, which is, Ayev toreif bidei gorotav. The lion kills, but here it's using treifas. Toreif tears apart bidei gorotav for its cubs. So my answer is, that's not a problem. Bishvil gorotav. For its cubs, it kills the prey and brings it back for the cubs to eat. For itself, it only eat the prey while it's alive. For its cubs, it can't do that, so it has to kill the prey and then bring it to the cubs. Umichanek lelibyotav, and it strangles for its lionesses. So again here, it sounds like it has killed the animal and then is going to eat it. Where it says, bishvil biotav. Again, it's not for the lion to eat it, but rather for the lioness. If it's bringing it back for the lioness, then it does it by killing the prey and then dragging the prey back. Vimalei teref chorav. It fills its holes with prey. Again, the Gemara says, bishvil chorotav. If he's putting it into storage or he's bringing it back to its hole, then it kills the prey first. Umeonotav trefa. So in its dens, it has the torn flesh. So again, there it sounds like it has animals that already, according to Rashi, passed away, or according to the Rabbeinu Hanano, that were torn apart by its teeth. Bishvil melonotav, again, the Gemara gives the same answer as yes. For its den, it takes back the meat dead. It doesn't take it back alive. Only when it's eating on the spot, at the kill, does it eat it alive, according to Rashi, or according to the Rabbeinu Hanano, it kills with its paw when it intends to eat immediately. When it's intended to use it later, it uses its teeth to kill or to capture its prey. So the Gemara here gave basically the same answer. Here we read a full pasuk in which the lion is described by what it does. And in each of these cases, it sounds like it's toreif, for it does these behaviors, even though supposedly that's not the normal behavior. The Gemara makes a distinction between why it's doing it. If it's doing it for itself or if it ate, it would only be doreis. If it's bringing it to other parties like the lioness, the cubs, or back to its den, in that case, it will be toreif as well. Vatanya. V'chein chaya sh'nichnasa l'chatzer nizak. So a chaya, a wild animal that goes into the area of the nizak, of the one who's going to be injured. Tarfa behema v'achla basar v'shalem nezek shalem. If it's toreif the animal, eats the meat, he has to pay nezek shalem. So what is the situation here? So here it sounds like you're talking about an animal that goes in and is toreif. Toreif means that it kills it fully according to Rashi, or it tears it apart with its teeth according to Rabbeinu Hanano. And then it says it eats the meat. So here you can't answer that, oh, it's taking it back. It says here that it killed it and then it ate it. But it killed it in a method which you're saying is not normal for the Ari, and yet you're paying nezek shalem. And even though the easiest way to solve the problem is bright, that to say it's talking about a ze'ev, who is normally toreif and not doreis, nevertheless, the Balei HaTosafot say that the usage of the generic term chaya implies that it means both ze'ev and ari, and that's why the Gemara is perplexed by this bright, if it references ari in the context of what Shmuel said, that an ari is not normally toreif. Hachem ha'eskinan shetarfala niach. It killed it in order to leave it over for later. It needed food later, so it killed it for its later feed. Where it says, ha'achlaktani. It says that it ate it. So what do you mean? It killed it for later. It's eating it right now. Bishanim lecha v'achla. Changed its mind and decided to eat it. So Gemara asks the question that you're all laughing about. How do you know that it first killed it to keep it, and then later on it changed its mind, it's going to eat it? It's not articulating what he's doing exactly. He killed something. He doesn't tell you that he's going to store to eat it. How do you tell the difference? The ode, on top of that, the Shmuel Nami. Then you also can say the same thing about Shmuel. Dimachiyu. Maybe the same thing too. I mean, by Shmuel, when he says, oh, it's normal for it to be Doreis, and not normal for it to be Toreif, how do you know when the behavior that he's describing here is normal or not normal? It depends on the intent of the line in that case. So who says, if it was Toreifit in order to eat it? Maybe he's being Toreifit to leave it for later, and then he changed his mind and decided to eat it. In that case, it would be normal because he was Toreifit to keep it for later. That's normal. So Amram Nachum Yitzchak that studied him Ketani. You're reading the Braita incorrectly. You're reading it as one single idea or theme. It has to be broken up into pieces. Shitarfala Aniach, if it was Toreifit in order to leave it later on, O Darsav Achla, or it killed it through Drisa and ate it, that is normal in both those instances, therefore Mishalemet Nezek Shalein. Both of those are normal behaviors. You could read this into the Braita without actually physically adding the words in. All the Braita says is it's Tarfa and Achla. So the question is that one thing where it's Tarfa and Achla? Or is it Tarfa, and then the Vav is, Vachla is a separate din. So if it's Tarfa, when would it be Toreif? That's when it wants to leave it over. Ve'achla is not modifying or qualifying the Tarfa, it's telling you another case. Or it eats. How does it eat? It eats by being Doreis. And so therefore the Braita is talking about those two instances, and both of those are normal behaviors for the lion. Ravina Amar Kikama Shmuel Bari Tarbut. Shmuel's whole din here is talking about a domesticated lion. Valiba de Rabbi Elazar. And according to Rabbi Elazar, Damar la borche, that it's not the normal way for it to behave. I mean, Rabbi Elazar in the Mishnah said that a lion can be domesticated. Since it can be domesticated, then if it has one of these behaviors, then it's unusual and it's considered to be caring. According to Shmuel, then even being Toreif is normal behavior. So both Toreif and Doreis are normal types of behavior for a lion. The reason that over here it's unusual is because the lion here is a domesticated lion. And because of that, doesn't normally Doreis or Toreif. Where it says, Yachi, afilu darsa nami lechayev. If that's the case, then you should make no distinction between Tarfa and Darsa. Why is the Bright only mentioning Tarfa? Darsa would be just as unusual. Ela de Ravina, lava Shmuel itmar. Ravina's qualification wasn't on Shmuel's statement. Ela matnita. It was on the Bright Day itself. Kitani matnita, that Bright Day that says this is Bari Tarbut, is talking about a domesticated lion, Valibid Rabbi Lazar, Damar Lavorche, that it's not its usual manner. So Shmuel, who made this distinction between Toreif and Doreis, we said it's talking about a wild lion. Then what we tried to suggest is Ravina is then coming along to say about Shmuel, now why is Shmuel then saying that when he's Doreis, Bishuter Abim, that it is unusual behavior? Because that is a domesticated lion. Since it's domesticated, it's unusual behavior. The Gemara says, if it's unusual behavior, then who cares if it's Doreis or Toreif? Both of those are unusual behaviors because it's a domesticated animal. It should make no difference. Why does the Bright only specify one? So then the Gemara says, let's separate. And say, Shmuel's din remains the same. Shmuel says that a lion is Doreis, not Toreif. And that has nothing to do with us right now. Then we have a Bright that says it's Toreif ve'ochel. So now the Gemara says, Ravina is coming to explain to you, why does it say Toreif Vochel? That's your Chayav over here. That is, on the Breita, that's a Libid Rabbi Elazar. Damar Lavorche. That it's not its usual behavior. And that's why you are Chayav over here. The Gemara says, Ihochi. That's the case. It's a told of Karen. Chatzin Nezek by Lishlume. Then you have to pay half Nezek. Why are you paying full Nezek here? If it's a subcategory of Karen rather than a subcategory of Shane. Diyayid. It was warned already. It became a muad for this. Yochi, my high. Diktani la gabi toldot to Shane. Wait a minute. Then why are you bringing it down by the toldot of Shane? Gabi toldot to Karen by the mitne. You should have brought it under the category of Karen. Kasha, that's a problem. The Braita itself is, as you can see, it's talking about v'chein chayash nichnasa lechatzer nizak tarfa be'ema v'achla basar mishalem nezek shalem. So that chaya that goes in, we're talking about there, or the Braita is in a context of Shane, or subcategories of Shane. The way that you're explaining it now, that Rabbi Elazar is the author of that Braita, and saying that it's Karen, why is it found in a Braita that's dealing with Shane? That's an inconsistent or the wrong example to be bringing down. If you want to give examples of Shane, you should have brought examples that fit Shane, not Karen, in the middle of a Breita, it's dealing with Shein. So that's difficult. In Ravina's explanation of the Breita, what the benefit of explaining this way in the Breita is because Breita that says that it's Toreif is not saying that Toreif is normal behavior, and therefore would be problematic for what Shmuel said before, which is Shmuel says Toreif is not normal behavior for a lion. Rather, it's according to Rabbi Lazar. Rabbi Lazar says that it's a domesticated lion. That's an unusual behavior for the lion. And so that's why you're chayav over here, because you're chayav mishum keren. That presents you with two problems. One of which is keren should only then be chayav chatzi nezek. Even if he becomes a muad, and it's been warned and it did this on a recurring basis, so it is a muad, you run into a secondary problem, which is that breita is in the category of Shein, or speaking about the category of Shein, and now you're telling me that it really is speaking about Karen in the middle of a topic of Shein, and that doesn't make so much sense. So in the end, that breita remains problematic for Shmuel, unless you reread the breita the way that Rav Nachman Yitzchak did, was let's study him, and by separating between the Tarfa and the Darsa in the breita, then you could then reconcile that back with what Shmuel said, which is, Tarfa is only la niach, and darsa is le achila. Next Mishnah. Ma ben tam le muad. What is the difference? We just quoted this in yesterday's daf. What's the difference between a tam and a muad? El shatam mishalem chatzi nezek migufo. A tam pays half of the damage that's done migufo, meaning that there's a cap on the liability of the mazik here up to the value of the animal that did the damage. On the other hand, a muad pays full damages. Min aliyah, the Gemara is going to ask what min aliyah means, but we've already mentioned numerous times, it means that out of the estate of the mazik, out of his net worth, he's not capped in liability for the value of the animal that did the damage, he is fully exposed for any damage that it did. The Gemara says, my aliyah. What does this word aliyah mean here? That doesn't mean an attic. So what does it mean over here? Amar Rabbi Elazar b'mi'ule sheminichasav. He has to go up the best of his possessions to compensate, to make restitution for the damage his animal did. V'cheinu omer. How do I know that's what it means over here? V'yishkav. Actually, the pasuk in Divrei Yamim says Yechizkiyahu. It has a yud in front of his name. Im avotav. He passed away with his forefathers. V'yikberu b'me'alei kivrei b'nei David. They buried him in the best of the lots of the burial plots of Bnei David, meaning of the kings. He was buried amongst the best of the kings. V'amar Rabbi Elazar b'me'ale, what does b'me'ale mean? Eitzel me'ulim shebemishpacha. By the finest of the family, umay ninhu, who are the finest of the Davidic line? David u'Shlomo. David u'Shlomo were the first two kings of the Davidic line. Chizkiyahu is buried next to them, meaning that first of all, from an allegorical standpoint, we know that the Navi looks at Chizkiyahu HaMelech as being a king on par with David and Shlomo, meaning that he was a very successful king that led a tremendous tshuva movement and does tshuva when the Navi comes to him and says, you're going to die here. And then he says, we know that from the Gemara Brachot, he says, I have a Kabbalah from the house of my father, from David HaMelech, that you never have to give up. If you daven, you can always get out of the predicament. And he davens, turns to Hashem, and he davens, and he does survive from that sickness against what Yishayahu had said would happen, that he was going to die from the sickness. So we see tremendous things about Chizkiyahu HaMelech, and therefore to associate him with David and Shlomo is not so unusual. In addition to that, his father was a tremendous Rasha. Achaz, the father of Chizkiyahu, was a Rasha, and the Gemara in Psachim tells us there that he dragged his father's bones around on a mitah shel chevel afterwards to denigrate his father, to show what happens to the rishayim. So that's why it says over here he was buried with his forefathers. Doesn't take it literally that he's buried next to his father, but rather his forefathers, the ones that he's more akin to, which is that of David and Shlomo, and not his father Achaz, who was a big rasha. Then it says in a pasuk in Divrei Yamim earlier, Vayikberu. Vayikberu over there is Asa, the king Asa of Yehuda. Bikivrotav asher karalo b'ir David, in the catacombs that he had dug out in Ir David. Vayashkiveu b'mishkav asher milev samim uznin, and they put him on the bier that was full of nice odors and spices. My b'samim uznin. What are b'samim and znin that were on the bier that he was being placed on or being taken out to be buried on? Belazamar Zene, zene. Different species or spices. As Rashi says, mine, mine, bisamim. Zan, which is teru today, zan is the word species in modern Hebrew. So zine, zine, or zne means many species or many types of bisamim. Bishmo bar Nachmani amar, bisamim shakol meriach ben bali de zima. So he plays on the word in a different manner, which is instead of zan being a species, but zona from the word zima or halotri. So there he says, these are spices that their odor brings one to zima, to that type of sexual behavior because of the nature of the spices. The reason why it might be that he had spices on his deathbed or around him is because the Navi tells us before that he was diseased in his legs. It seems that his legs were, even prior to his death, were having gangrene or rotting, and they probably had a foul odor to them. So even prior to his death, they probably had these bisamim, or these nice smelling things around him, in order to overwhelm the smell of the disease in his legs. And then when he passed away, that's why on his bed, on the Mishkav, he had all these spices when they were taking him in for burial. So why is this brought down over here? Most likely because Rabbi Elazar Amar. Over here, we have Rabbi Elazar giving or explaining to us a pasuk. In the first case, we brought it down because it had to do with Aliyah, Bar Mishnah, and explaining the word Aliyah means me'uleh, the best of your items. We saw that from Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Then it parlayed into Asa HaMelech because Rabbi Elazar again answers the question as to what is the meaning of a word in a pasuk. And the same thing might be true with the subsequent items as well. Here we bring a pasuk from Yirmiyahu. It says, Ki charu shucha. So the people who were against Yirmiyahu for his nivuot and they wanted to kill him, it says, they dug a ditch in order to entrap me. Shucha is like the word that's used in the Mishnah, shiach, which means a built out depression or ditch in the ground. Upachim, and they put out snares in order to trap my legs. Rabbi Elazar Amar, Shechashdua Mizona. So here you see Rabbi Elazar again commenting on here. What was the issue they had with Yirmiyahu? It was chashud of having znut, or being together with a harlot. So Rashi points out here, one who's together with a harlot is not chayav mita, because it's not eshet ish, may not be appropriate, may not be right. But over here, the reason the problem was, because as Tosafot says, Yirmiyahu was a kohen. Yirmiyahu is a kohen is asur bezona. It says he's asur bezonah. That was the problem, that Yirmiyahu, if he was consorting with a zonah, he was abrogating his status as a kohen. Remember that Yirmiyahu is from Anatot, which is in the ear of Kohanim. Yirmiyahu is a kohen, and that was what the problem was over here. Rashi says, Shmuel Nachmani says, they expected him of having adulterous relationship. So that's chayav mita. That's a much more serious item of eshet ish. The one who suspected him of zonah is akin to the pasuk we find in Mishlei, which is kishucha amuka zonah, that a deep ditch is what a zonah is like. So you see the idea that zonah or znut is compared to a deep ditch, and therefore Yirmiyahu says that they were trapping him in a ditch. That's how you know that they suspected him of being together with the zonah. That's where Rabbi Elazar got it from. According to Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, who says that they suspected him of having an adulterous relationship, my shucha. Then what's the meaning of ditch here? How do you associate that with adultery? So, atu eshrish minafka michlal zona. Wait a minute. Zona is a terminology, and we know that from the Gemara in many places. It doesn't just mean a harlot, a zona. A zona means anybody who's in an illicit relationship. So, eshrish is a particular subset of zona or znut, but it's still called znut. So the fact that it's eshet ish doesn't make it not znut or not a zonah. It just is a particular type of zonah or more severe type of zonah. And so therefore it could fit in as well. Bishlam alamanda mar shchashdu me'eshet ish. The one who says, Rav Shmuel ben Nachman, who says that they suspect him of an adulterous relationship, hainu dichtiv, that's what it means in the pasuk. Again, this is in the same parak in Yirmiyahu that we saw before. It's the subsequent pasuk. Vata Hashem yadata et kol atzatam alay lamavet. That you knew all of their counsel against me was to kill me. You know that these people want to kill me, and therefore all of this will befall them. I mean, the beginning of the pasuk says, all of this will befall them because they want to kill me, or their counsel is to kill me. That makes sense because eshet ish is subject to a death penalty. So that's why they wanted to kill him. Why does it have to do with death if he was suspected of consorting with a zona? Shishluchu the bear teeth. Now, it's not talking about the fact that they were suspecting him of znut. That's not why they wanted to kill him. But they threw him into a cistern full of plaster or cement, and they threw him in there in order to let him die there. So they tried to kill him. It's not that they were suspecting him, and therefore that's why he was deserving of death. But rather, they actually did try to kill him when they threw him into the bore or the cistern where they thought they would leave him to die. So that's what he's referencing over there. All of this is off topic. The only reason we're bringing it down is because in each of these instances, Rabbi Elazar is the one explaining the meaning of a word in the pasuk. So this is all tangential. The only reason we brought it in the first place was because of the word aliyah, which we got out of that first pasuk that we brought. Everything since then is just similar to the way in Gemara and Brachot, but it starts quoting a gadata from a certain Amora. It continues to do all of the memorot that he had in a gadata. Somewhere over here, you have a similar genre of Rabbi Lazar's statement, and therefore they bring them all down. So many of the mefarshim over here note that what was unusual about Yirmiyahu that they says it's chashdua mizona. The Marsha points out that Yirmiyahu and Navi was very similar to Moshe Rabbeinu. Both of them had to either separate from their wives or not have a wife because of their unique or close relationship with Kodesh Baruch Hu. Moshe separates from his wife because of the nature of the nevuah that he experiences with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Yirmiyahu was told not to marry because of his dedication, quote-unquote, to Klal Yisrael as a Navi of Klal Yisrael. So the suspicions arise from the fact that they both are not, quote-unquote, married. Moshe has left his wife. Yirmiyahu was never married, so that's why the rumors circulate about Moshe Rabbeinu that he was Mizanen Eshedish, and that Yirmiyahu was consorting with a zona. The Maharal over here explains why by Moshe Rabbeinu they thought it was Eish HaDish, and here by Yirmiyahu they thought it was Znut or a zona, because of the difference in the nature of the nevuah that Moshe Rabbeinu received versus the nevuah that Yirmiyahu received, and therefore he draws that distinction as to whether the violation, quote-unquote, that people suspect them of was Eish HaDish or zona, and that being there being a Navi for all of Klal Yisrael, a Navi both for Yehuda and Yisrael, which is unusual. Most Naviim, aside from Moshe Rabbeinu, either a Naviim for Yehuda or a Naviim for Yisrael, not a Navi for both kingdoms. And here, Yirmiyahu is a Navi for both, and therefore he is akin to Moshe Rabbeinu, who is also a Navi for all of Klal Yisrael. And that was the problem that the Maharal raises over here, which is that the unique relationship between Bnei Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that there is some sort of relationship that if the Navi comes in and says that he's a Navi, and he's going to intercede between Bnei Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's akin to Eish HaDish. It's as if their Navi is taking Hashem away from Klal Yisrael. And so therefore, by Moshe, it's deemed to be, quote-unquote, Eish HaDish. By Miel, it's already considered to be Zonah, because of course Baruch Hu's relationship with Klal Yisrael has already been severed, and that's why the Churban is coming, that's what Miel is predicting, and therefore it's only considered to be Znot, not considered to be Eish HaDish. So that's how the Maharal explains the difference in the Chashadot between Moshe Rabbeinu and Yirmiyahu, and connects the, similar to what the Marsha does, connects between the two. Alright, then it says, Darish Rava, Maidichtiv, what is meant over here, again, this is the continuation of that Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, it says, they should be tripped up or they should be caught up in your anger whenever you take out your wrath on them. Punishment of what they did to me should be included in that. Or that should be a part of the retribution that you are taking. Even at the moment that they do tzedakah, make it that their tzedakah goes to people that are not appropriate to receive the tzedakah, so they should not get any reward for that. Now the first thing is, what does this have to do with tzedakah? So Bali HaTosafot says, that is the Pasuk says, that your tzedek, your tzedakah walks before you. So over here, where Yirmiyahu says that, yumukshalim lifanecha, so the word lifanecha is used here, Tosafot says, that's similar to the word lifanecha that's used by tzedakah. And that's why he says that you should be mukshalim lefanecha. Tzedakah should turn out to be a problem or a tripping up of them rather than a benefit to them. How do you do that? You have their tzedakah go to someone who is inappropriate. Now, the problem with that, or what you have to say about that, is that Most Rishonim, most people believe that if you give tzedakah and the person's a cheat, a thief, or doesn't deserve the tzedakah, the person who gives it still gets the mitzvah of tzedakah because they're being generous and they're giving it tzedakah. The fact that that person is a cheat or a liar, the person who gave it thinking that he's doing tzedakah. So what some suggest over here is the distinction to be made is whether you did the mitzvah of tzedakah or did the mitzvah of tzedakah that will provide you protection. We know that tzedakah tatzil mimavet. That type of tzedakah tatzil mimavet is only when the tzedakah is given and it goes to the appropriate individual. Because we know, ani chashuv kameit. Ani is like a mate. When you give tzedakah to the mate, then you revive the mate. You brought tchiyat ha-meitim for the mate. So similarly for yourself, midah keneged midah, you have tzedakah tatzil mimavet, which is that you have a tchiyat ha-meitim similar to what you did for the ani. But that's only in the case where you gave it to a real ani and he was brought back to life by your tzedakah. Then if you give tzedakah and it goes to an inappropriate end, then in that case you do get the mitzvah of tzedakah, but you no longer have the midah midah keneged midah of tchiyat ha-meitim. And therefore it won't have that power of tzedakah tatzil mimavet. And that's what the distinction that many make over here, which is that even though it's going to B'nei Adam Shei Mehuganim, Yirmiyahu is not saying they don't get schar for that, but if it does that way, they won't have protection from that tzedakah when God brings out his wrath upon them. V'kavod asudo b'moto. This is going back to the pasuk in Divrei Yamim, talking about the death of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. And over there it says they did a great honor for him in his death. Melameid sheyoshivu yeshiva al kivro. That they set up a yeshiva on his burial place. Pligi by Rabbi Natan Rabbanan. Chadamar shlosha. Some say they did it for 3 days. Chadamar shiva for 7 days. Ve'amri la shloshim. And some say it's for 30 days. You can understand that. Those are the different sections of Avelut. 3 days, the first 3 days of Avelut is the most severe part of Avelut. Shiva is the beginning piece of Avelut. Shloshim is the next stage of Avelut. So they're arguing about how long they had the Shiva there. Was it for the first 3 days, the first 7 days, or the first month? As the Balei HaTosafot point out over here, that's not a simple thing to do because we have a principle of Loig LaRosh, Cherev Ma'aseu. You're not allowed to make fun of the dead. What does it mean, make fun of the dead? It means to do mitzvot in front of the dead when they can't do the mitzvah. So if you're learning on or right about his grave, that would be making fun of him that he can't learn anymore. So Tosafot says they didn't literally sit on the gravesite. They were more than four amot away, which is what the Gemara says. If you're more than four amot away, you're not considered to be within the sphere of the one who passed away. And therefore, it's not loig the rush. So you can wear your tzitzit out. You can all those things as long as you're more than four amot away. So Tosafot says the same thing here by the learning that they did it at least four amot away. There are others that disagree and say that the only time it's considered to be loig the rush is when you're doing a mitzvah for yourself or you're learning for your own personal benefit. In that case, you're taking for yourself, and it's almost like making fun of the mate that he can't do that. Although, if you're doing the mitzvah particularly for the mate, then you're not making fun of the mate, because you're doing the zchut the mate. And over here, where they set up the yeshiva for the benefit of the mate, that's not loig the rush. They're learning to his benefit, for his merit. The reason that they did this is because Chizkiyahu HaMelech, as the Gemara tells us, brought back Torah to Klal Yisrael. It says in the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, there was not a child in the Beit Midrash that didn't know the dinim of Taharot. I mean, that he brought back Torah to Yisrael, and since he was so chared al Dvar Hashem to bring back Torah and learning to Klal Yisrael, then the appropriate response to the death of Chizkiyahu HaMelech is to set up a yeshiva, to set up, to learn by Chizkiyahu HaMelech as a zchut for Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Now, the way the Gemara describes it over here, it's described as something that was done during, right after the death of the individual. There are others that say that this practice, and seems to be, it was a practice in the time of the Amoraim, was that on the yurt site of that individual, they used to go by the kever and set up a yeshiva and learn by that kever to be reminded of the fact that this person was a big part of the Mesorah, he was a Talmud Chacham, and to be a schut for the mate, they learned the Torah, and I would assume that they also set over the memrot from that individual by his kever as a schut for the mate in that case. All right, we're going to stop here on the top line of Yud Zayin Amud Aleph.